Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Kidney Cumbers. Of course, coming live from Houston, Texas, your hometown, your adopted hometown, Chuka. thanks for joining us, everyone. This is our conference coverage from ASN Kidney Week. We're very lucky today to have Richard Lafayette here to talk about the Origin 3 study. As many of you will know, Richard is Professor of Medicine at Stanford University, and we're going to be talking about all things related to IgA nephropathy, APRIL, BAFF, and so on and so forth.
Very exciting. Well, Rich, it's always good to see you, and congratulations on the big plenary late breaker. So this is big. We have finally, long awaited, the primary endpoint data for atacicept in IgA nephropathy. Tell us about, you know, how are you feeling right now?
Well, again, super exciting times. Predictably exciting, though, based on all the phase two data. So I think it's just really, really great. We've gone from sort of anticipating an era where we can use more modern therapies for our patient to actually now living in it. And obviously, there's going to be regulatory hurdles ahead. But right now, it looks like the trials resulted in a resounding success. And hopefully, the company can get a licensing agreement to the FDA so that patients can get access to what looks to be a great intervention.
Yeah.
So, Richard, for those of our listeners who didn't get to the presentation or who weren't able to get here to Houston, can you tell us a little bit about the Origin 3 trial, its design, the primary outcome, and the main findings?
Absolutely. So what was really unique, I think, about Origin 3 was designed really as just a continuation of the trial design of Origin 2. And Origin 2 was a dose-finding study initially, looking at three different doses of atacicept, ranging from 25 to 150 milligrams weekly at home injections compared to placebo. And then it proved at 6 months that each of the doses were antiproteinuric, but the maximum dose did the best. So that was selected such that at the end of 9 months of placebo-controlled study, all the groups rolled over into open label study of the 150 milligram weekly dose. And as you know, and we've published, there were really very, very nice effects where the galactose-deficient IgA1 was very well controlled to about a 75% reduction from baseline. Proteinuria came down by about 50% on average over that time period out to 96 weeks. Hematuria in patients who had it at baseline resolved in about 80% of patients in the atacicept group. And then finally, the GFR, which had stabilized during the placebo period, stayed stable enough that the net change was about 0.6 mils per minute per year of loss, which for patients who were predicted to have tremendous loss in the placebo period were looking to lose about 8 mils per minute per year. That's a tremendous stabilization, which hadn't been seen before, although now looks like maybe it can be recreated by other agents in this class. So the phase three study looked at very similar criteria, biopsy-proven IgA nephropathy, more than a gram a day of proteinuria, GFR over 30, max tolerated RAS inhibitors. They could use SGLT2 inhibitors. And in fact, more than half of the patients were on SGLT2 inhibitors as well. And the 9-month data really looks very, very similar. First, the population by design is very similar with high risk. These are 40-year-olds, global population, balanced Asian and white patients predominantly, slightly male predominance, and GFR is just over 60 mils per minute. Proteinuria, nearly 1.8 grams per gram, so between more than 2 grams a day of proteinuria, so a very high-risk population. But yet, treatment with atacicept reduced the proteinuria very similarly, in fact, even numerically better than phase two, to more than 45% reduction. There was about a 7% reduction in the placebo group, so the net effect is just over 40% reduction in proteinuria. But like the phase two study, hematuria was controlled and went away in the vast majority of patients in the atacicept group and wasn't really impacted by placebo. The galactose-deficient IgA went down nicely, again, by about three quarters, 80%, and was sustained in that range. And the GFR data, the regulatory agencies won't let us release it. I haven't seen it. And that's yet to be seen. But again, with the rest of the study looking so much like the phase two, we're very hopeful that patients are experiencing a nice GFR effect. And at the same time, the real key features is this drug does reduce IgA, galactose-deficient IgA, reduces IgG by about 30%, IgM by about 80%. But yet there was really no difference in infections, really no difference in adverse events except numerically more injection site reactions. And in fact, numerically severe adverse events, including severe infections, were greater in the placebo patients than in the atacicept group. So it's really, again, as good as it can be in terms of a result from the phase three. Again, I'm allowed as an independent person outside the company to say I'm really excited and expect to see a wonderful GFR impact. And again, for me, I want to see the drug available for our patients.
Fantastic.
Yeah, this is fantastic. So just to remind our listeners, so this is the 9-month primary endpoint data. And as Rich alluded to, the trial is ongoing and we are waiting the 2-year GFR data, which unfortunately we don't know. But based on the 96-week data from the phase 2B, it was quite remarkable. Yes. That 0.6 ml per minute per year, which is close to, as you know, some will say, physiologic GFR decline with age. So I think this is, you know, very exciting. Of course, we all want to know the GFR data, but there's no reason to believe at this point that it should look very different from the 96-week data, albeit that was, you know, in a smaller group of people and it was open label for part of it. So, Rich, I think, you know, the question right now to many people is how did these patients do? It's a once a week injection. You know, is this something it sounds like they're going to need to continue for the rest of their lives to be able to, you know, see that sustained benefit? We talk about significant reduction in Gd-IgA1 along with the proteinuria reduction and the hematuria resolving in the patients that had it. But, you know, some other studies have shown that once you stop the drug, all of that comes back. So the Gd-IgA1 goes back up, you know, proteinuria starts to increase again. What are your thoughts about that with atacicept?
Yeah, it's clear that the drug needs to be present to control those biomarkers, the galactose-deficient IgA1. Just to be clear, there's no proteinuria data post-cessation. Unfortunately, they didn't measure it. But in the case of the ARGENT-2 study, when patients discontinued, we did see a relatively rapid restart of losing kidney function. So that's a little bit worrisome, and drug holidays and taking patients off the therapy will have to be watched really, really carefully. So we'll need to see further data. There will be opportunity to see more patients off in other programs. Hopefully we'll get more data about what happens. But this may very well, for the majority of patients, be a therapy that needs to be continued. Will therefore really rely on seeing longer-term safety for sure. Continued efficacy beyond even 96 weeks is going to be something we're going to look out to see as the patients both from phase 2 and from phase 3 can roll over into long-term extension studies. So we will get that data. And I think our patients and our colleagues will just have to decide if they're early adapters or not, because again, it's just so thrilling to see such good effects, to look at like it's mirroring the phase 2 study, and that expectation for kidney preservation looks to be high. But as you said, we have to wait for the 2-year data to be truly sure about that.
And Rich, in the context of other therapies that you've alluded to, B-cell therapies, you know, one of the unique features of atacicept is its dual APRIL BAFF inhibitor. What do you think is the value out of the BAFF and in addition to the APRIL, and are we going to be able to tease out some of those theories?
Yeah, as you well know, there's sort of mixed signals in preclinical models about the relevance of either BAFF or APRIL overall in humans. It does look like people with IgA nephropathy do have dysregulated BAFF and APRIL, and therefore there does look like there could be value to blocking both and getting long-term stability, long-term B-cell modulation, and good control of the disease. But as you're also pointing out, with anti-APRIL therapies alone, we're seeing great results so far. We'll hear more later this week about sibeprenlimab and earlier data from other programs. So I think it's just going to be an issue that we need to watch longer term, more patients, and get more definite data about whether they really separate either in terms of efficacy or safety.
Yeah, this is, I think the question is, you know, how are we going to choose between all the different therapies? It's a great problem to have in IgA nephropathy when we haven't had drugs for, you know, decades, and now we have multiple drugs approved. I think I was very excited to hear that over 50% of the patients were not just on maximum tolerated RAS inhibition, but also on SGLT2 inhibitor, as well as, you know, Brenda and I have talked about, you know, implementation and uptake of SGLT2 inhibitors and some exciting data that Brendan is actually presenting this week. One of the questions I have, do you know yet whether or not there was a difference in terms of response in those patients who were on baseline SGLT2 inhibitors and those who weren't?
Yeah, so in our presentation, there was also a subgroup analysis and looking at all the subgroups examined, which range from age and sex and degree of proteinuria, GFR, racial background or geographic background. There was no difference. Everybody responded the same. And that also pertained to SGLT2 inhibitor use. Whether you were taking it or not, similarly, you got a greater than 40% proteinuria reduction. So it does look like the pathways are quite distinct, not surprisingly. Mm-hmm. And that despite optimized background care, truly optimized, this mechanism still holds importance, and you can still see disease benefit. And again, as much as I personally believe you should be sort of thoughtful and look at each agent individually and only maybe in very high-risk patients jump to combination therapy early to get to our goals of really preserving GFR, to getting to very good proteinuria control, we're probably going to have to get more and more experience with these combinations. So indeed, it's really encouraging.
Well, thanks so much, Rich, for joining us. I know you've got a really busy meeting in Houston today and the rest of this week, indeed. So, and so much progress, as always, in IgA at the moment. It really is a renaissance in CKD trials, and it's great to be living in it and hope that we can get this out to as many patients as possible to cure kidney disease.
Yeah, and thanks for spreading the word. And the main thing is stay tuned. Changes are coming. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Well, thanks everyone for joining us for this episode of Kidney Compass. Make sure to check out our other conference coverage throughout the week. We've got a range of great interviews and look forward to seeing you soon. Thanks.